Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
A 40-yard field goal try. Good snap and hold. The kick on its way, and the kick is good! It's good! Dicker, the kicker, comes through, and with 9 seconds to play in the ballgame, the Longhorns lead it, 48-45.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
1:39 on the clock. Seattle trails by 2, 33-31. Play clock ticking down. Goff goes under center. Gurley. Goff falls forward. He's got a first down. He's got a first down, and that's going to do it.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Lorenzo Cain will make the catch and let the celebration begin for the Brewers here at Coors Field as they have swept the Rockies and are moving on to the National League Championship Series.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, it is 12:02 in the Rose City. It is time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you. Boy, you know, a lot of things going on this past weekend. Who needs to put a Freddie Freeman home run or Ronald Acuna home run in the
Something
Open?
Something glaringly missing from the Open on a
shocking,
Monday.
Very shocking.
Wow, no tomahawk chops, no war chance in the back where we get a Brewer sweep. It's the Rockies didn't score.
Yep, who that needs to do the Brave game?
That might be the most boring divisional series in the history of the divisional playoffs in Major League Baseball.
I mean, it's up there.
That
yes.
was a pretty
6-0.
That was pretty bad. You had a brief period of relevance in the ninth inning of game one when the Rockies tied it up, and then they lost it in the 10th inning.
They were down 2-0 that entire game.
They had like two hits the whole game, maybe one. They couldn't touch the Brewers pitchers the entire series. That was an awful three games of baseball.
Yeah.
You know, and that game last night was pretty exciting. There's a couple of moments I could have thought of that maybe should have made the Open, but
Who needs a grand slam in,
you know,
in a playoff game?
Something we all have to do, Swigard. When we step in here, we have to check our bias at the door. We all do it.
Yeah,
we all do it.
Nope, he didn't. He sure didn't. I watched that entire game, first inning to ninth inning.
That was how nervous were you?
As did I.
Pucker factor.
You don't get to talk. You you completely disrespected the essence of what that series is. Because if the Dodgers would have got that win last night, damn sure guarantee
then
it would be in the
series would have been over, and I would have had the final call.
No, we had
I think we had big Dodger home runs on like Thursday and Friday in the Open.
Pretty sure we
Those
did.
Those are meaningless game one and game two.
Pretty sure we did.
Nowhere to be found.
I was incredibly nervous because the Braves pitching staff leaves you not very confident, which is why I'm not feeling confident going forward, but
your bullpen's a little leaky.
It's been leaky. It's been leaky. It was the area of concern. The lineup at some point was going to break through and have at least a 6-run game.
Right.
But the pitching has never really been great this year, especially the bullpen. And so, yes, I was incredibly nervous.
It was a funny moment, if you didn't watch the game, where a fan base went from being immediately upset about a terrible call to being overjoyed about a terrible call. Because that pitch to Acuna was ball four.
And he took it.
And it wasn't even close. Now, he needs to learn you can't, like, lower your bat and walk out of the box as the guy's like, just at least stand in there and pretend like you're going to swing.
Can I just say it? I loved it.
Well, if you would have like popped up the next pitch, you wouldn't have loved it, because if you would have stood there normally, it would have been ball four.
So why you're saying the ump?
I think it threw
that game ball four because of the way he took it.
I just think it threw him off. Like if you stand there and your hands are up and you're acting like you're going to swing and you step and you lean down like your body normally goes down in a swing, then the pitch is clearly high. It was almost at the letters. But the fact that he was kind of standing straight up and stepping out of the box, it just was a weird situation. You don't see guys do that very often. But then the next pitch, he hit a grand slam, so all was forgotten.
I thought he called it a strike
because he felt bad for the pitcher.
He just couldn't throw one.
That kid, Buehler threw like seven or eight straight balls, and you could kind of just feel he walked Sean Newcomb.
He watched the pitcher on
he
four pitches.
A pitcher on four straight. No, hey, we talked about this. You're gonna disrespect my team like that? Why should you be jumping in? How's there not one highlight? Seriously, how is there not a highlight in the open?
I was waiting for it the entire open.
I want to know
waiting.
Why there's not a highlight.
We got Dicker the kicker.
Dicker the kicker.
The Brave game's more important to this show than Dicker the kicker. We can talk about Dicker the kicker.
You had the Seahawks and Rams playing a surprisingly good and entertaining game.
Oh, hitting him with the no
yeah,
one
I'm going to hit a no one cares
Ooh.
There. We're
and
talking
then,
about
and
our
then
baseball team.
You had the
team.
First team to advance to the next round of the playoffs.
No one cares.
Boom. There you go. Did anybody watch Brewers Rockies, by the way?
No, I didn't watch a second of game three.
I didn't either. No. I saw the score and I was like, should I watch that? No, I don't need to watch that game.
Yeah, I looked at the score. It was like 2-0 right off the bat, I think. And I was, no, I'm good.
Brewers are their LCS team. The Rockies are not this year.
Poor Rockies. Rough run for them, you know?
Look at baseball. Baseball hasn't gotten me fired up in quite some time. It's nice to have a team in the playoffs a little bit.
It helps you a little bit, doesn't it?
You know what? I have to be fully honest with you. I mentally had prepared a bad news tweet. Like, I had a tweet ready in case the Dodgers came back and won.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mentally, I'm like, you know what? We should probably just not be mad and be like, hey, this was the year we were supposed to make a step, get close, not get there. We got there. Won another division title.
Yeah, right.
And thankfully, I didn't really get to the point of even typing it out, and we able to secure the game.
Hey, you're alive, man. And this really was, it was a great sports weekend. This was a solid one. You had good baseball games. Some of them were boring, but that game yesterday was awesome. Braves, Dodgers, 6-5.
Boston,
New York has lived up to the hype, and those have been two entertaining games so far that keep you around, keep you watching. You had awesome football on Saturday and Sunday, and then you had like a Malice in the Palace times two in Las Vegas on Saturday night.
Yes, you did with the McGregor.
Like, dude, that
fight.
Was like UFC doesn't rope me in. I know when the big fights are happening, and it's always I'm curious who won, but it's not something I like seek out and have to go watch at a bar or buy it in my house. But I was watching the Stanford Utah game that was on ESPN, the late night game, and it ended, and they just kind of rolled over into SportsCenter, and I just had the TV on. I didn't change it, and they tossed it to the guys because I was kind of off Twitter all day, and I didn't see what happened. And then it was like Verrett and Buchegras, I believe, were doing the Sports Center, and they looked shocked. They were like, we've never seen anything like this before. And it immediately piqued my interest, and I had to dive into Twitter to find out what happened. I was watching the videos. That was nuts, man.
Can I just go out on a limb with that one? Because I'm talking non-diehard UFC guy here. I was not surprised in the least that he did that.
That he jumped into the crowd and started beating
people
up. Not
surprised in the least. And then that dude called out his entire family.
Yeah.
His country.
He did.
He poked at his religion. And that guy doesn't, he can speak English, but it's kind of broken. So I don't think he feels super confident being able to try to match Conor McGregor word for word. Also, I just think he's a guy that rather go out there and beat you up than talk about beating you up. But you could kind of see he legitimately hates Conor McGregor. And so when he did that, this goes back to the bus incident. This is where this all kind of formulated at. This is how the fight got made. McGregor shows up, throws a stool or something at a bus window, breaks it. Cops are called. I said it when that was reported that was because that was going down in the middle of our show when he threw that.
That was
thing
a wild.
Bus.
That was a wild scene.
I said it the day that it happened because we were talking about it during the show. It's a WWE ploy. This whole thing is WWE. Now, did Dana White expect him to go into the crowd and scare a couple people and try to fight? No, but Dana White's loving every second of it. He's eating it up.
Oh, absolutely.
He's sending out fake remorse. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so embarrassed. No, you're not. You're going to make a ton more money when you sign them up for the rematch. Because we're going to see, is McGregor truly old and shot now as a UFC contender? And you get to see Khabib again in the ring to see if he can repeat his win in the fourth round?
Right.
It's WWE, but they let each other actually fight.
That was great. It's great publicity for the sport.
It's tremendous publicity. I just love people going, I can't believe it. I'm so outraged. It's so embarrassing. It's so terrible. No, it's not. This is the sport.
That's what they want.
This is the entertainment that you get. It's the press conference. It's the weigh-ins. It's the fights themselves. By the way, that wasn't even the best fight of the night. The best fight of the night was one of the undercards. It was Ferguson Pettis.
You also, was that the guy who had the funny post-game interview? Or post-fight interview?
I missed the post-fight thing.
You didn't see that one?
No, I missed that one.
Oh, okay. We're going to have to get to that. I know Dusty and Cam played it this morning, so the audio's in the system. This big dude, I don't know, somebody help me with his name, because I don't follow UFC that closely, but this big dude won a fight, and he was getting interviewed by Joe Rogan afterwards, and it was hilarious. Like, he had to take his pants off, he said, because his balls were too sweaty. He went on, they, like, asked him when he was going to take on a title fight, and he said he's too fat, and he needs to do some cardio, he's too fat right now. It was great, man. That was a great night of entertainment for the UFC.
That's what UFC is, though.
That's exactly what you need.
And I feel like the only people that have something negative to say about that, really, you're not the crowd. You're not the audience.
No, no.
They reach the audience
you,
with that.
You want, every sport is looking to try and rope in the fringe guy or the guy that doesn't usually pay attention. And I'm that way.
Derek Lewis. People are texting
Lewis.
Derek Lewis.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm that way with UFC. You roped me in on Saturday night.
Yeah, you get.
I mean, look, roped me in.
You get some people in this, in UFC and boxing. I think you have people that they'll get you. You don't watch every single pay-per-view. But you get something like this, and I'm in.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly what they knew they were doing. This was set up months ago. When did he do that? February, March, April? Time frame when he threw it at the bus. So I wasn't surprised. And then Khabib won. He was the favorite. He won. Beat him in four.
Jumped into the crowd.
Went to go fight at McGregor's trainer.
That was awesome.
Did you see the guy from Khabib's team that jumped into the ring?
Yeah, he punched McGregor, didn't he?
Yeah, he punched him from behind.
Melee, man.
McGregor turned around like, what's going on here?
I don't usually advocate violence, but damn, that was entertaining.
All right, we got a good show today. A lot of football to react to, and we'll start with the Pac-12. We'll get to the Pac-12 weekend that was. You got Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan. All right, welcome back in 1216 here on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. We're on Twitter at Dirt and Sprague. We got some poll questions up there. The Better You Today text line is 55305.
You guys go to focus at 1:30?
Yeah, I'll be able to multitask.
All right. I can just do like an hour and a half of Duck Husky radio if you want.
On a Monday?
Yeah, what the hell? It's Duck Husky week.
It'd actually be funny if you did that. And this isn't said to diminish your abilities and skills, but it'd be funny if you did that. And then by Thursday, you're like, dude, what else are we going to talk about?
Yeah, I got nothing left in the tank, man.
I gave it all on Monday for an hour and a half.
I have that now, too, because often I'll come in. I mean, there was no game this weekend, but we'll have to react to the game on the show. And then I have to do the roundtable show Monday night. So there's only so many opinions you can have about a game. And then you have to do the pregame show. You run out of content pretty quick. I'm not going to lie.
You know what I did on the last Duck postgame show? I just completely recycled everything.
Well, you went Colin just did the same segment again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. My first hour was my second hour. Okay. I thought, you know what? People are still driving back. It was, what was the last game? Was it
the cow game? Yeah.
God, it was midnight. I'm just going to redo this entire thing. We're going to do this again. And I did that for Stanford as well. And I just said, you know what? If you heard this, that's on you. Turn the station. But don't turn the station.
Don't. Keep
it
here.
You know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's a long drive home from Eugene at that.
It is. Yeah, it is. So that's why I'm just like, you know what? I can say this again and a whole other group of people will hear this. By the way, Houston just tied the game 1-1 against Cleveland.
That they did, Bob. That they did.
All right. Let's talk about the Pac-12 weekend that was in college football. I actually, if you could do me a favor, if we could save Colorado, I actually want to save Colorado for their own segment. I feel they're very worthy at 5-0.
Okay.
And I also want to talk about Laviska Shenault.
Okay. He's a stud.
He's having a hell of a year. I guess I just start with, how about my Beavs?
Hey, they kept it close for 3 quarters.
Three and a half, come on.
Yeah.
Kind of 3.5.
Yeah.
3.25.
Sure. 3.75. Whatever it was. No, I mean, that was, I think this is the way a lot of their games are going to go this year. You've seen it a couple of times now. Offensively, they can hang with teams in this conference. And it's crazy. I didn't think I would be able to say that coming into the year.
Me either.
But when you look at the numbers, you look at the points they've scored against some defenses. Washington State doesn't have a juggernaut defense, but they're not terrible on that side of the ball. And you essentially had, 30 points going into the fourth quarter? I mean, that's not bad. And it gave you a chance to be in that ball game. But then again, you're reminded of the negative that you cannot stop a nosebleed. If you had a defense that could any way, shape, or form come up with a stop once in a blue moon,
yeah,
you'd have a chance to win 3 or 4 games this year. But you just simply don't have it, especially when you're playing a team like Washington State. Minshew was 30 of 40 for 430 yards and 5 touchdowns. He had 5 touchdowns and 10 incompletions. Like, that's nuts. And you can't win games when your defense is that bad.
Did you see what the Oregon State beat reporter put on OregonLive.com?
I did not.
So I like to read those every once in a while. He did a, 13 takeaways that he took away as the beat guy from the game. And I almost tweeted this to you because I thought this would really upset you, given your fandom. He thinks Gardner Minshew is the best quarterback at the conference.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, I'm obviously not going to say that.
I was kind of surprised that he said it, though.
Numbers-wise, you're going to go there because of the team he plays for and the offense he's in. So the Herbert's
Who are you taking, though?
I take Justin Herbert.
And I guess that's more my thing is you can give me numbers, and maybe he meant that. Maybe he would take Minshew,
if
and that's fine.
If you put
fine,
Justin
but.
Herbert in an offense where he was throwing it 40 to 50 times a game.
Yeah, imagine him with a leech offense.
You're
in
telling
a game.
Me he wouldn't put up these kind of numbers?
Yeah, I don't know. That's not said to take away what Minshew's done. I just thought that was an interesting little note that he took away. Is he devoted an entire section to Minshew and says he's the best quarterback in the conference. They're going to have to do that if that's how they want to be in conference play. They have a bye this week, and then they get Cal, and then USC, and Oregon, and Washington. It's not an easy slate for them. Colorado, I think, is in there as well.
I think you got a chance in 2 weeks.
I think you do, too, based on what we saw from Cal against Arizona, which, by the way, did anybody watch Cal, Arizona?
No, I missed that one completely.
I flipped over later.
I didn't watch 1 second of that football game.
Because that was a night game at the same time as Stanford and Utah. And then Washington, UCLA was randomly close. Like, what the hell? So that one kept you around for a while.
Yeah, I scratched my head. What? Washington went up three. I know there were some
upsets.
They were
up 24-7 at the half on UCLA. Yeah. They only won 31-24. My thinking on that. Washington is still the team I think they are going into this weekend's game.
They are who we thought they were.
Well, weird offensively. Can you trust them? And we know what the defense is. Yeah. I thought they just kind of took the foot off the pedal, stopped caring about UCLA, and was like, they're getting ready for Oregon.
I can't really blame them for doing that. It just was weird. I envisioned that as absolute
blowout. Chris Peterson's not keen on that. I imagine the defense got a stern talking to and a finger wag in the post game.
Yeah, you'd like to see.
You can't give up 24 points to UCLA.
Yeah, but like, why? What is it? I guess I would just say I know it doesn't look great for them, and that's going to worry some people. But like, what does it affect them at all?
Yeah, you're such a husky honk.
Well, no, I just I find it interesting because I know they beat UCLA by 7. The spread's 21. You and I had a parlay with that game.
We did. We thought the Huskies would cover.
Our parlay was shot at that point, so it didn't matter.
No. I didn't think they'd score unless there was something fluky. I thought the Husky defense could just shut them completely out.
Yeah.
I
see what you're saying, but I also kind of flip it and just say, this is their game. Like, this is the weekend. They're coming to Eugene. Oregon had the bye. Oregon's been practicing their tails off. They're geared up and ready. This is going to be the revenge of the point game. As Jake Browning had that picture where he pointed at the Oregon defender and they ran the score up on him. I think there's a little element to that of you got your toughest game coming up.
Minus
the Auburn game.
I agree with you.
And it's just, we're going to win this comfortably. Yeah. And they didn't win it comfortably, but they won.
I always do. You have to look at schedules. You have to understand what teams are looking ahead to, what's on their mind.
It reminds me of Oregon, San Jose State.
It's exactly it. They had Stanford the next week. They didn't give a rat's ass about that San Jose State
game.
I didn't think
San Jose State would score on Oregon. They had 22. It was kind of ugly. They had Stanford the next weekend, and they were obviously ready at the beginning of that game. And that's sometimes what you get in college football.
To get back to the original point before we got sidetracked, yes, I do give Oregon State a chance in 2 weeks. Cal's offense is not good.
It's not good.
That's the reason Arizona won that game. I didn't watch a ton of it, but just reading up on it and seeing the highlights, they threw a couple of picks.
McElwain had three.
I knew one of them was a pick six, and I think two of them might have been defensive touchdowns for Arizona, but somebody could correct me if I'm wrong there. So Cal's offense is really struggling. And that's the kind of game you're going to have to circle to try and get a win in, because you're going to need an anemic offense to help your anemic defense. But Oregon State continuing to put points up. This is the way you wanted to build. You wanted to show that you have some fight. You can hang in some of these games. You did it against Arizona State last week. You had a chance to be a touchdown down going into the fourth quarter, and you failed on the fourth and goal, and then it got out of hand. You had a chance. You were down a touchdown in the fourth quarter against Washington State. Then it got out of hand. So you're proving that you can hang for three quarters with some of these teams. So it's giving you a glimmer of hope. And then, as I've mentioned a million times, it's about how can you improve improve the roster for next year. And they continue to get good news out of the transfer recruiting trail, which is exactly what you want to see as an Oregon State fan.
Well, they're turning into Nebraska West, which is always great.
Hey, I'll take it. 4 or 5-star kids want to come.
Yeah, like, take the chance on it. Like, if they don't pan out, then whatever.
Sure, and I know some of those kids, like the wide receiver kid was kind of a disappointment if you ask Nebraska fans.
Tyjon Lindsey is who you're talking about.
Yeah, he never lived up to the hype out there, but new, fresh scenery, maybe that's all it's going to take, and he's going to be in an offense with a coach that knows how to get him the football.
Well, you know, because I'm watching that game, and I think Washington State went up 14-0 in like 6 plays, and I was like, here we go. They're going to lose 56-7, aren't they? And they came back and they fought. They actually took the lead there in the third quarter when they went up, 24-21?
Yeah.
So it was nice to see the fight. You know, I thought they kind of laid over and just didn't have anything in the Arizona game. And they responded the next week. And again, they're not covering these spreads, these huge spreads. So don't take everything I'm saying and think that I think Oregon State's going to win 4 games this year. But it's nice to see some life. Defensively, they are the second worst defense in the country. Do you know that?
Who's worse than them?
Give me 1 second. I had it earlier.
Like I thought Power Five?
No. Old Dominion was down there.
Oh, okay.
They're FCS, though.
Well, Oregon State. Yeah, Old Dominion's better than Oregon State defensively. UConn is worse than them defensively. They give up 658 yards a game.
So they're the worst Power Five defense then?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
I mean, that doesn't surprise anybody.
The next closest Power 5 defense is Ole Miss, who's 124. So Oregon State, look, their defense is terrible. I think there needs to be criticism there. I know they're injured and there's not the most talent. Should you be this bad? I'm okay taking the optimistic approach on the future and the offense. Can we point some fingers to the defense? I mean, that's god-awful.
It's pretty bad.
But as you mentioned, getting some transfers in. You know, you have Jebby at quarterback, who's a 4-star kid. Maybe he works perfectly. Pair that with Hodgins, Bradford. I believe Tongiai is back for one more year.
Jefferson's a true freshman.
You have the best rusher in the Pac-12 this year right now, and Jamar Jefferson statistically. Pair that with Art Pierce coming back. This is going to be a nice offense next year, and I expect it to get better. So you're looking different reasons. But I think they really have a shot. If they can beat Cal, get to 2 wins, finish the year at 2 wins, build upon that with the transfers and the recruiting class, maybe be in a better position next year. Maybe next year is a kind of a little bit of a reach, but maybe you're a sneaky bowl team with that offense. Because defensively, I don't expect them to take a monster jump. Their offense is going to be their best defense for the next year or two.
Yeah, and that's true. And that, to me, is where you're going to see the growth, is in that side of the football from year one to year two under Jonathan Smith. And I'm going to circle a couple of these games. Cal, to me, is one. USC is another one I'll even circle.
See, the Cal one is the only one I'll get on board with.
I'm not willing to say you're going to win it, but I always remind people of last year when they should have beat Stanford.
Yes.
Like if I circled that.
And
this,
Colorado. They were actually up on Colorado right. last year.
Like if I circled those games at this point in the season for Oregon State last year, you would have laughed at me and said there's no chance in hell they win those games. But it's a November night. That'll probably be a 7:30 game when USC's in town. And USC always seems to struggle in Corvallis. You just kind of circle those ones. You're going to have enough offense to surprise some people this year. And I think that's why people are feeling somewhat positive about the direction. You feel good about the head coach. You feel good about what he's doing on that side of the ball, and you feel good about what he's doing in the transfer department. You're just going to have to suffer through having one of the worst defenses I've ever seen in the history of college football.
Maybe ever.
Yeah.
A couple thoughts to the Better Today text line. Spray going all Alex Crawford with the bowl projection.
Yeah, I would be easy on that. I mean, that's, you know.
Well, but look, what else?
Sure.
Why? Why
yeah,
what do I have to lose?
What the hell? Take your
what
shot,
What do
man.
I have to lose?
Ducks by 2 touchdowns this week. Take your shot. You know what I mean?
This one from a UW fan, a Husky fan who went to the Beaver game on Saturday. Even though I was distracted by the UW score on my phone, sheesh. Got to say, really fun environment. Always a environment and a lot of excitement about the team on Saturday for 3 quarters. Yeah, it seemed like everybody just enjoyed them being around. Just being in a ball game where maybe you didn't expect them to was a positive. So, you know, look, you got blown out. You lost by, 19, I think, was the final amount of points you lost by. But
yeah, you did not cover the spread.
No, you did not. But you showed some fight for a long time, and that's what I think Jonathan Smith in year zero is looking for. By the way, did you watch the kickoff, the trick play kickoff? Did you see it?
No, I missed this.
So they did the lateral throw. So the kid caught it, but the kid he threw it to, I don't know how people caught this. So the kid catches it. He's on what would have been the left side. And he runs up and he stops. This kid was laying on the end zone. And the end zone's black in research, and they were wearing black unis. He was laying in the black part of the end zone, so Washington State didn't see him. He gets up. The kid throws it across the field. He gets it. He goes 57 yards. I was like, there we go.
Dude, I totally missed that,
That's
man.
What we need.
You need plays like that.
It's the only way we take care of it. All right, we didn't get to Stanford, Utah. That was one Dirt called. Did not know Bryce Love wasn't going to play, and boy.
Stanford's got concerns, man.
Look good in the fourth quarter of that game.
I've been banging that drum all year. There's just something about them that I don't trust. They should be 3-3 right now.
All right. Well, we'll get back into some more Pac-12 action, but I do want to talk about Colorado-Arizona State. I thought that was the game of the weekend to watch, in my opinion. It ended up being a pretty good game. I want to talk about the Buffs, who are the last undefeated team in the conference, and their stud, Laviska Shenault Jr., having an incredible year. We'll do that next. All right, 12:35. Welcome back in on the Fan. Colorado is 5-0. If you raise your hand and you had Colorado as the last undefeated Pac-12 team, you win a cookie.
Totally saw that coming. I didn't see this weekend though coming. I thought they'd beat Arizona State.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't surprise me. But being the 5-0 and kind of being the talk of the conference right now today about how legit they are with the rest of the South and within the conference. You know, I didn't see that. I thought they could be flirting as a bowl team this year. I didn't peg them as the worst team in the conference the way that other people had. And I thought Montez would have a good year. But the surprise is really Laviska Shenault Jr., who's had a monster season. I looked it up for the show. And because if you watch the ASU game, you saw what he did. Just in case you missed it, 13 catches, 127 yards, 2 touchdowns, 5 carries, 2 touchdowns. He had all 4 of their touchdowns. He has 6 touchdowns in his last 4 games, and statistically, he's first in yards per game in the country. He's 3rd in receptions, 10th in touchdowns, and 3rd in total yards in the country. Not the conference, the country. So Laviska Shenault is really the talk, and I would highly advise, I'll put this on our Twitter page, at Dirt and Sprague. There's a really good write-up on him on USA Today today. And it's just about who he is, how he came out of nowhere. Do you know how he came to play football?
I do not. I've never heard the backstory.
It's a really good story. He chose to play football because his high school basketball coach told him to cut his dreads or he couldn't play. And he gave him the big F you. I'm going to go play football.
I'm not doing this anymore.
And it's a really good read. He lost his dad at 10 years old, watched his dad get hit by a car on the side of a highway, which is just horrific. He talked about how he was going to go to Alabama. Alabama gave him a scholarship offer. He chose Colorado while they were 5-40, and he chose him because he said he didn't want to go somewhere where his name would just get lost in the shuffle. He wanted to go somewhere and get credit for the rebuild. So he chose Colorado.
That's a kick-ass story.
Yeah.
And I think if you're an Oregon State coaching staff, you hear a story like that and you say, let's use that in recruiting.
Let's go find another one of those guys.
Don't get lost in the shuffle. Come be the guy that leads the turnaround. And he's turning heads. Everybody in the conference knows his name. People around the country, especially if Colorado continues to play this way, will continue to learn his name. And you have to remember with him, too, he's only a sophomore. So he's got another year of football left, which is incredible. And he didn't do much last year as a freshman. And to burst on the scene this way, it's been a lot of fun to watch. The way they use him, whenever you have, and I've said this a couple of times about Colorado this year, when you have a player like that, you just want to make sure you have a coach that understands, get him the football any way, shape, or form that you can. And there's some coaches that, I don't know why, but they struggle with that, of just getting the ball in the hands of your best player. They don't struggle that way. They had 5 carries with him. They line him up in the Wildcat. He had 13 catches and 2 touchdowns. They get him the football in every imaginable way, and it's one of the main reasons their offense is as good as it is. Montez is having a big year, so you want to make sure to give him credit.
Right.
McMillian, their senior back, is having a good year. He's close to 600 yards, so about 100 yards a pop, and he had a big game on Saturday.
135
is solid. So they have decent balance, but then he is the difference maker. And I think for a team like Colorado to go from being a good little team, 7-5, 8-4, to being a team that can win a Pac-12 South and get off to a 5-0 start like this, you need to have a special playmaker like that, and they found it in Shenault.
Well, and I know you still get some people that are like, are they really that legit? Yeah, I think they are legit. I do. I think they're going to be around in the South, and I think they're going to be the team really to go through. They've got a great test this weekend.
They got a showdown in L.A.
They go to L.A. They get to play USC. They are over a touchdown underdog to the Trojans.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, me either. But, you know, Vegas seems to think or know something. And now we get to see, and they beat USC. Like, at that point, do you proclaim them the best in the South?
If they beat USC, I don't know. I don't see how they lose the Pac-12 South. I really don't. Arizona State is a good football team that was going to hang with them in the South. They now have not only two conference losses, but Colorado also has the head-to-head over them. USC has already lost a conference game, so you have to consider that. So if Colorado is able to win that week, to win this one, you got a two-game lead over everybody. If Colorado wins this weekend, pave the carpet for them. They're going to be in the Pac-12 championship game.
Yeah, and it'd be the second time in 3 years, which is remarkable. He did it in 16, McIntyre. Obviously, last year they took a step back, and you'd be doing it again this year, which you look at Mike McIntyre, you look at Colorado and go, man, nobody thought you'd do it this year. 16 was even a surprise. We continue to kind of overlook Colorado within this conference, and they have an opportunity to do something two times in 3 years. It's quite remarkable. You know, on the other side, too, because Colorado gets that win, Arizona State's 1-3 since they started 2-0. Remember that win against Michigan State and Herm Edwards was the talk of the conference, and oh, Herm Edwards, see everybody, he proved everybody wrong. They are 1-3 since that win.
You know, and I'll say this about Arizona State too. The only one that you kind of glance at and you wonder, was the game at San Diego State. They had that hangover loss where they were coming off the big win. But the other one, I mean, they lost by a touchdown to the Huskies in Seattle. That to me is not a bad loss. And I do believe the Colorado's a damn good football team, and that was a back-and-forth game that they had a chance to win, and they were on the road in that one.
Well, so we don't know if Wilkins would have come back in that one because he got banged up, and then they never stopped him on a couple third downs.
So we don't know if he could have finished the game or not. Arizona State's got a chance. I mean, they get Stanford at home in their next game. Then they're at USC. Then they get Utah. This is, to me, as long as Wilkins is healthy, it's a good football team. They're going to find some wins. I don't fault them at all for losing a game at Washington and losing a game at Colorado by a touchdown apiece. Those aren't bad losses in my mind.
Yeah.
And I think not all records are created equal. And Arizona State's 3-3 is not the same as maybe some others in the conference.
So Colorado, the talk of the conference, they are 5-0. Laviska Shenault Jr. is probably the best player all around in this conference right now. As somebody texted in the Better You Today text line, he looks like a legit monster, potentially on the next level as well. He's a hell of an athlete. He is really fun to watch. He's making Colorado must-see TV. All right, we have a loaded second hour, but coming up next, I kind of want to go to a national topic in college football. Is Tua at Alabama the greatest quarterback of all time?
We have our third goat in like 4 weeks on this show. Let's do it.
There are some mind-blowing stats about the season he's having, and I want to read them to you. We'll do that next on The Fan. We got our NFL whip around coming up. Cleveland retakes the lead 2-1 on Houston in the divisional series. Atlanta and L.A. coming up here at 1:30. You won't care because his team is so good, and it seems to be something that's going to hurt him in a much larger conversation. But this year, Tua Tagovailoa is the best player in college football, and it's not remotely close. Have you seen what he has done? I'm just curious because I know they haven't played great teams. Yeah. So I'm wondering. You see the scores, you know they're undefeated. Do we know what he is doing?
No, I don't think we do because they haven't played anybody yet, and they've won all of their games. The closest margin they've had is 22 points in a win over Texas A&M. Other than that, nobody's even been barely within 40 points of them this season.
So if you missed it, they absolutely annihilated Arkansas this weekend. He has 25 incompletions and 18 touchdowns. He is 75% on his passes at 19.7 yards per completion. He still has no interceptions, and his passer rating is 258.4. Just for reference sake, Bill Conley took the last few Heisman winners in the first six games of this season. Those are his numbers. He combined these other Heisman winners with their best six games. Not their first, their best. He combined them. He is better than everybody. And just as a reference, Marcus Mariota in 14, and we know how special he was that year, had a 220 rating. Tua's got 258.4. No interceptions, 19.7 yards. They're averaging 202 per scoring drive. So as Conley mentions, he's actually hurting his defense because they're scoring too quickly. He has been unbelievable. And I don't know why, but he kind of just... Yeah, he's there. Well, he's just there.
Let me try and find a couple of theories of why he's just a there guy. I think that's a little too extreme. People understand how good he is. The guy won the national title last year.
But he is on his way to statistically having the greatest season of any quarterback ever, and it's not close.
Yeah. Here's what I'll say about Tua. First, thank you, Mark Helfrich, for not recruiting him. Second,
God, by the way, he's got a little brother.
God, that stings.
You might have had a pipeline here of
Tua Tagovailoa, greatest quarterbacks of all time. Part of it, though, I do believe is one, they haven't played anybody yet. They haven't been on national TV a ton, which is surprising because usually for Alabama, it's a team that's on national TV and that's kind of a game every week. Not the case. I mean, their non-conference showdown was Louisville. The only big conference game they played so far was Texas A&M at home, and that was kind of a ball game. A&M hung around, but it was in Tuscaloosa, and you knew they didn't stand a chance in hell. So when he moves on this season and they get games like against LSU or you get to Auburn or you get to the SEC title game, I think this will become more of a conversation piece of just look how dominant he really has been. The other part of it, though, is, and this is, it goes back to kind of a Jared Goff segment we did, of how much of it is him being just out of this world great, and how much of it is having the best talent around him, having a defense that doesn't give up anything. He has been sacked. He's played six games this year. He's been sacked twice in six games.
Yeah.
Defense, you can't get to him. You can't stop the running game.
Part of that is a little him, though. He's got the mobility. He can move.
I know. I get, he's had games of, 47 rushing yards against Ole Miss on five carries, average, 10 yards a pop. He's got a couple of rushing touchdowns. He can move. But I do think that is a part of this equation as well. He's not doing this at Kansas State. He's doing it with.
Why do we care about that? Because you mentioned, I'm not disputing your facts here. I think a lot of people are feeling probably the way you are, right? Oh, he's at Alabama. But like, why does that have to matter when we're talking about a guy who was a five-star quarterback? It's not like he came out of the woodwork and a two-star guy earned a job. And no, this was the best of the best when he came out of high school. He went to the best place, and he's exceeding even what people expected him to. This is the best Saban offense by like 35 points.
Yeah, he's the best quarterback Nick Saban's had in Alabama. I don't even know if it's close.
It's not remotely close, and I know they've not played great opponents yet, and they're going to get into the meat of their schedule at some point.
Yeah.
But like, where are they at? They're averaging 67.8 points per game. They're taking five plays to score on average.
Yeah.
Where is this team at with Jalen? I still think they're undefeated. Are they putting up these numbers?
Oh, of course not, but they're winning all these games.
Right,
that's
right.
The point.
But I just think... And by the way, he's hurting his defense. He's making his defense worse statistically.
The numbers are crazy.
I'm just kind of...
To me, it's just as simply, I want to see him against better teams. Like, that's the only thing. Nobody's doubting his ability. He's an absolute monster. But I think when you phrase stats like that, you put him in the context of, is he like the greatest college quarterback of all time?
Well, realistically, he's not.
Is he having the best season
we've
ever
seen?
But he
could have the best season of all time.
See, and that's where I want to see him play at LSU on November 3rd. I want to see him play against Auburn in the Iron Bowl. Now, Alabama's probably going to win both those games by 30 points because nobody's going to touch them this year, and they're the greatest damn team of all time, and it's incredibly frustrating. But at least you'll have a game like that to point to of saying, man, you see what he went into LSU in a night game and he put up 380 passing yards. When you get a performance like that, that's going to create the national
buzz.
But
you've also already kind of set it up in the way that I think other people will. Well, and they'll probably win that game by 30.
Of course they are. It's Alabama.
So like, even the tough games that we're labeling for him, it's kind of like a foregone conclusion that they're so damn good with him that it's ultimately not going to matter. They're
Alabama. Nobody's going to beat them. Nobody's going to beat them.
You don't think anybody's going to beat them this year?
Who's going to beat them?
You don't give Georgia a shot?
No, I don't.
What about...
I don't think
Ohio State after what I saw against Indiana.
No.
Clemson, if Trevor Lawrence can be healthy,
might have a shot.
No, Dabo.
No, I think Georgia's the only team that realistically has a shot.
See, I don't think Georgia and Clemson are really that different. I might be off my rocker on that.
I don't think they're that different. The games I've watched Georgia's
played nobody. They have like the fourth worst schedule so far, strength of schedule in the country.
Well, same with Bama. But no, Clemson, even though they've had some issues, at the quarterback spot, that defense, for all of the hype that came in for that defensive line, we've seen schools like Syracuse move the ball on them. If you're supposed to have the front four are all like first and second round NFL draft picks, Syracuse should not be almost beating you and putting 26 up.
Yeah, but I mean, Look, we're holding them to the
Nobody's
Bama.
Nobody's going
to
beat them. Nobody's going to beat
them. The Bama level, but.
Nobody's going
to
beat them.
You're entitled to have a bad game or two.
Just move on. Then we'll move on to 2000. Wait, no, he's coming back, so we'll move on to 2020.
He's a sophomore, right?
I'm going to try. And, yeah, he's a true sophomore. I'm going to try.
I don't
and
even know how he rates as an NFL prospect.
I mean, I'm sure he's going to be a highly touted kid.
But isn't he like five? Is he 5'10"?
He's listed on ESPN, which I know you hate their lines and their listings. He's listed at 6'1", 218. So he's probably
5'11".
5'11", 6'.
Yeah.
Just over 200 pounds.
Yeah, but the athleticism is going to help a lot with that.
I will say this, too, about him. Lefties are so aesthetically pleasing to watch play quarterback.
He makes it even more entertaining.
I love watching.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Like lefty quarterback slinging it from the pocket. There's just something about it. Like David Green back in the day at Georgia. There's been some good...
Did you go David Green?
I did just drop a David Green reference. Remember him at Georgia, number 14?
I do remember David Green,
yes.
He
was good. They went like 11-1 every year with him, and they just would lose that one game, and they couldn't get over the hump.
Mark Richt's a bum.
Exactly.
Well, in a year where there was a little uncertainty, just a little, I can't believe how much better he is than I thought he would be.
Yeah. My only memo is play somebody. Just play. I just wish they just play somebody.
But see, even if they beat Auburn, by the way, that doesn't look like a great win now. They just lost to Mississippi State.
No, Auburn's already got two losses
now. And then if they beat LSU by 30, like we're just going to look at those two games and go, well, they're not that great. And then if they house somebody in the first playoff game, we're going to be like, well,
I don't know.
They're not. See, that's how good he is. It's leading us to just go, well, damn, they're not that great, though.
Let's also, though, remember, and you have to remember this. This is a team that has won 4 of the last 6 national championships.
Absolutely.
And he has only been a part of one half of one of those games.
But damn, they don't win it without that half.
No, they don't. He diced up Georgia in the second half, as a listener pointed out. And I'm not forgetting that. But this is a program that has been essentially unbeatable since Nick Saban started winning in like 2008.
It's just tough for me with a program with that much talent to watch a guy go in and show he has more talent. It's tough for me to knock it. I'm with you on the strength of schedule. It's not great. We won a bet with the first half there where they covered against Arkansas, but he just takes him to a level that is scary. I mean, it's a cheat code. We've wondered for like 8 years what it'd be like if he had a quarterback at Bama.
Yeah, if you could put a great quarterback with the defense and the offensive line and the running game and the weapons.
This is far and away the best he's ever had. It's not close.
No.
It's not close at all. All right, sorry to depress you a little bit there. But hey, you got Justin Herbert, so it's not like he got the raw end of the deal.
He could be a redshirt freshman in Eugene right now.
He would not redshirt. He might beat out Herbert. What if last year
he would have redshirted?
He might have beat out Herbert.
See, stop with that. He's not. Herbert's the number one overall pick in the NFL draft.
That's not the same as being the best
if
college
Justin
quarterback.
If Justin Herbert was at Alabama right now.
We're not going to argue about this again, are we?
What would his numbers be? Yes, we are.
I don't know what his numbers would be at Alabama.
You don't think he
good.
Would throw 18 touchdowns? You think they would have lost? Lost A&M.
I think the kid is special. I'm just saying, I think the kid is super special.
He would not be starting over Justin Herbert right now.
You don't think Cristobal opens that up?
No, I don't.
He wouldn't hate me if I asked the question. I almost want to ask him the question tomorrow.
Don't ask him the question.
You had Tua, would you open it up?
Don't ask him that question. Huh? Stay away from
that. Don't worry about your big rivalry game this weekend, Coach. Answer that question. Would you have opened it up to Tua?
You look, you're digging the knife in my back
right
now.
I'm not trying to dig the knife.
You're bringing up Herbert. What, you want to do a segment on the Stanford game coming up next, huh? Damn it.
Kickoff hour, too. How did the Ducks lose that game? Just kidding. All right, we got a loaded second hour. Odell Beckham becoming a diva yet again. The MLB playoff updates. We'll get you the scores on that one. Talk about a couple of the series so far. The Seahawks Ram game was really entertaining yesterday. The Seahawks cutting it real close there. Did Pete Carroll cost them that game? But we'll start hour two with our NFL whip around. That's next. Your home of the Oregon Ducks, 1080 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, There's joy in every journey.